All right.
Good morning. My name is Ursula Odom, and welcome to Think and Grow Rich Mastermind. And today we are talking about imagination with our special guest and actually normally co-host, Galen Bingham. And I have to tell you, we're excited about this today because Galen is a wonderful source of wisdom, and we get to hear him in full form today. So what is this? Every Saturday we come together to talk about Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, and you get to join us, and we are so excited about that because this is an exchange between us and you and Napoleon Hill. And as I mentioned, today we're going through Imagination, the Workshop of the Mind. It is the fifth step to riches, which is our place today. And Galen is our special guest, and he's had a passion for this for over 30 years. And after earning his BS degree in business administration at Southern Nazarene University and a MBA degree at Rice University, Galen went on to win awards for leading in some of the most recognized brands in the world, like Imperial Sugar, Kraft Foods, and the Coca-Cola Company. Galen is a World Coach Institute certified executive coach with success strategies leveraged by more than 875 corporate executives, CEOs, and nonprofit leaders across the United States, Canada, Mexico, and England. Galen is an author of two books, Impact, A Leadership Fable, Your Power to make a Lasting Difference, which is a featured member of the C-Suite Book Club. As founder and CEO of Kill Global Coaching and Consulting, Galen takes permanent success into every client's work and life. With our co-host, normally it is Ann McNeil, myself, and Pagim Estevera, along with Dr. Peter James. Well, I tell you what, we are here today representing all of them, and you will hear from Galen and myself today. Our other guests are doing some things that are absolutely wonderful that you'll hear about and may be popping in and out, but as of today, it's the two of us. Now, for myself, I am CEO of Sula 2, and we make old, new, and everything we do. In that, we capture, preserve, and present legacy information in any form possible. To that end, we capture your story and make it available to others. And that's why I like doing the things that we do here on Think and Grow Rich, because we share that story, your story, our story, the story of Mr. Napoleon Hill. So without further ado, I would like to have Galen say hello and begin the walk down this path. Good morning, Galen.
Good morning. Good morning. Great to hang out with you this morning, Ursula.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah. So, this is just a great opportunity. I always enjoy any time I get to talk about Think and Grow Rich. It's become a big part of a lot of what I do. My clients, they either enjoy or they get sick of hearing me talk about these principles because it seems to be such center stage to any level of success that you want to have. So I'm looking forward to this conversation as well.
So let's start at the beginning. How did you first become aware of Think and Grow Rich?
Yeah, this is one of those books that everyone says that you're supposed to read, especially if you're going to consider yourself to be educated or somewhat successful. You've got to own this book. You've got to have it on your bookshelf. And, right after college, I started working and people started mentioning this book. So I bought it. It's on my shelf. I read maybe a few passages so that I could talk intelligently about it. But I really didn't give it more than just a cursory read for that reason. And it wasn't until about 5 years ago when I started getting involved with the National Speakers Association and just happened to run into this lady in the hallway of our national conference. And, I'm kind of wandering around looking for where do I go next. I mean, I don't know what I'm doing. And she says, hey, aren't you coming in? We're about to start. Lo and behold, that was Ann McNeil. And I just followed her. I didn't know who she was, but she seemed to know what I needed to be doing. So I followed her in, and it was the Black National Speakers Association breakout. And they were talking about launching an intensive mastermind study of Think and Grow Rich. And I remembered the book from, someone recommending it. So I said, hey, let me go ahead and get into this. Let me do it. Let me find out what everyone is raving about. And that must have been 4, maybe even 5 years ago. And since then, I have really come to appreciate what everyone's been raving about, and I think I might be one of the main cheerleaders on the sideline now.
Okay, so today we're talking about imagination, and to for the benefit of the audience, what I'd like to do is just simply read a little bit about what imagination is according to Napoleon Hill. The imagination is literally the workshop wherein are fashioned all plans created by humankind. The pulse, the desire to is given shape, form, and action through the aid of the imaginative faculty of the mind. It has been said that anything that can be created, which is a human being, can imagine. Anything can be created which a human being can imagine. So that's what we're talking about today, is where the desire that we have, that impulse to do something from creativity is put into action. And apparently there are two kinds of imagination. One is synthetic, and through this faculty, one can arrange all concepts, ideas, or plans into new combinations. This faculty creates nothing. It merely works with the material of experience, education, and observation with which it is fed. It is the faculty used most by the inventor, with the exception of the genius, who draws upon the creative imagination when unable to solve a problem through synthetic imagination. Creative imagination, through the faculty of creative imagination, the finite human mind has direct communication with infinite intelligence. It is the faculty through which hunches and inspirations are received. So, Galen, tell us about the different kinds of imagination that have materialized in your life and how you've used them.
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite parts of not only just this chapter, but the entire book. And I bring that portion into a lot of my coaching conversations and leadership conversations, because synthetic imagination is the one that you use most frequently, right? That's the one that we practice in school, where you get these concepts and you have to find a way to kind of package these concepts in new ways to solve problems that you may face, right? Here's a theory from Einstein. Here's the life story of Jack Welch, right? How do you meld that into solving this particular problem? But the creative imagination, that's the part that requires courage. That's the part that requires that you say, hey, look, this hasn't been done before. And I've got this idea, I've got this hunch, I've got this inspiration, I had a dream last night. And to have the courage to act on that dream, to act on that hunch, that's where the real magic happens. Synthetic imagination is really important, right? It's really important that you learn those concepts and, you know, that you go to school, that you get an education, however you might get that education. I've said that all of education comes from experience, either my own or that I borrow from other people. So that's really important. But boy, I tell you, that creative imagination, that takes courage. And that's, like I said, that's usually where the real magic comes from. So, you know, even things where I have tried to relaunch and rebrand my business into a space that I had never been before, early in my entrepreneurial effort, I was calling myself a coach. Quite honestly, what I was doing was mentoring. So I was leading people down paths that I had been before, you know, coaching them and giving them advice on how to do the things that I had done, giving them the courage that they too can do what I had done, or at least aspects of what I had done. And I was calling that coaching, but that was actually mentoring. Coaching is about a process. It's about giving people a language, about giving people the courage to do things that not only might they have never done it before, but I haven't done it before either. But I can give them, again, the language and the courage to step into that space of uncertainty. And that requires a good degree of creative imagination. So that's one place where I use it constantly.
Now, I have to tell you, when I first read the one on synthetic, and it says it creates nothing, that kind of jaws you a little bit. It's like, oh my God, especially since what I do is that I gather, preserve, and present legacy information. It's all based on a lot of things that have happened. And then later in the chapter, it says, we will concentrate on synthetic because that's where most things will happen. And so the way I see that is that it is the foundation. It is the beginning. If you don't have the knowledge of the past, how in the world can you position it to be creative and to give that creation a solid foundation, as I mentioned? And what comes to mind is I've heard of a political candidate, and not a publicly known person, so I'm not talking about somebody that most people know, but it may apply, that cares little about history. So if you could care less about history, how are you making decisions? I mean, how can a person make sound decisions if they don't have history? So when you have that solid foundation, then to me, that creativity can just fly, because there is that confidence in knowing that you know what you know, and then the creative place can go in and tap into that infinite wisdom. So what are some of the most creative moments that I would say, or that you would say you have had about yourself?
Wow. You know, first of all, let me talk a little bit about what you just said, because I totally agree. I think that there is so much value in knowing what's happened in the past, knowing how not only the events of what's happened. I think that's the first level. I think the next level is trying to step into the process that someone went through in accomplishing whatever they did. Right. And when you understand that, that is what gets the as Satchel Paige used to say, that's what gets the juices to jangling, right? so that you can start thinking, okay, well, how can I start thinking about problems that haven't been solved before, problems that currently exist, and then you start applying that synthetic creativity to solve those problems, and this is stepping into the connectedness of all these other chapters, because in the brain and the subconscious chapters of this book, it talks about how your subconscious mind is always working. Mm-hmm. And even while you're sleeping, your brain is still solving problems that you give it. And usually that's where the hunches come from. So I think you're absolutely right that you've got to be able to know the past. You've got to be able to know how things are typically done. then give your subconscious mind an assignment. Let it work on it overnight. And Napoleon Hill talks about, you know, how your brain, your creativity of your brain, your subconscious mind seems to work best when it's stimulated, when it's at a higher rate of vibration. When you do that and you give it an assignment, it then starts working, and then you'll wake up with a hunch, with this point of inspiration of how you might solve some of these larger problems. But you can only get that if you have a good understanding of what's happened in the past. You know, one of the key things that I'm reminded of, and we are about 15 minutes into the conversation, so I think this is probably enough time for me to start talking about my daughter, right? Most of the conversations I have, I end up bringing my daughter into it at some point. But I'll tell you, that for me, that is an area where there really is no rule book, right? A lot of people have written books, they've tried to write books, but there is just no way to know how to be a parent, especially if you're trying to be a good parent, right? We leverage the synthetic imagination a lot, right? This is how Big Mama did it. This is how my parents did it. This is how Grandma did it. And we try to apply those. And then eventually we come to the point where we realize what worked for Big Mama back in the day might not work 100% today. And we've got to start just acting on inspiration. So for me, that's definitely been the case. I've been the most imaginative when trying to help my daughter think about the things that she can prepare for as we start thinking about college. She's 17 now, and she's absolutely brilliant. And so as we start thinking about college, still wanting it to be her decision, but giving her some things to think about, because I know at 17, I didn't know what I needed to know. I didn't know what had to go into that kind of a decision. And so giving her those things to think about without relieving her of the responsibility of making that decision for herself, that's definitely an example of where I use everything I could possibly find to help me be as best of a parent as I possibly can be.
So you've talked about one baby. Let's talk about the other baby, and that's your company. When I think of imagination as it relates to you, I remember we were on the show and the introduction was being given and term made. No, looked at it as it said baked, and I thought it was a typo. So it got translated into make. And so when we had the discussion, apparently it is baked. And when you told us about exactly what that meant, it was amazing. So would you recreate that moment? Just tell us what that means.
Yeah. So the name of my company is Kill Global Coaching and Consulting, and Kill is K-I-L-N. And if you think about how clay, something as impressionable as clay, is turned into pottery, there has to be a process, because clay in itself is not hard. It's very soft. It's very impressionable, that kind of thing. It's very fragile. And if you think about how steel or any alloy is somehow melted to turn into something more desirable, more functional, more productive, there has to be a process to take it from being one of the hardest materials in the world to something that you can mold and bend. Well, both of those go through a baking process, a curing process, where intense heat is applied in order to change those materials to a more desirable state. And the oven that they use to hold sometimes 3,000 degrees worth of heat is called a kiln. And I read an article many, many years ago, it must be 20 years ago, where they talked about how leaders, in order to be effective, leaders must be able to hold the heat for their people to turn into who they are supposed to be. And I thought then, wow, that would be a great name for a consulting company or for a coaching company. You know, I'm surprised no one has ever done that. I hadn't heard of that. And then when I got into coaching, coaching was actually, like I said, it was really more of a pivot from being a speaker and I try to be inspirational. And so the name of my company is Galen Bingham Inspires, and Galen Bingham Inspired Coaching. And at the beginning of the year, I started collecting a lot of clients that were wanting me to do things that were about inspiring them. You know, help me get ready for an interview. Help me get ready for this new project. Help me work on these tactical things. And I would do that, and we had some success. But at the beginning of this year, I decided that it was time to summon the courage that I talked to my clients about and step into that space where, working with really, really serious leaders, helping them get to where they're supposed to be, helping them bake permanent success into their life and work, and very literally have the courage to hold the heat that would create that kind of a leader. And Kill was the proper name for my company. And so that's what it's about. That's the founding of it. And I have to remind myself with every engagement that it's not my job to be my client's friend. It's not my job to inspire them, because growth rarely happens in comfortable places. It rarely happens. And I've never seen anyone, and I've never personally experienced where I've done something extremely well and it was really, really easy and everyone raved about it. And then I've turned around and said, well, let me analyze what happened here and how can I get better from that experience? Right? That doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Usually it comes when, boy, that didn't go well. That was really, really hard. That was uncomfortable. Oh my God, I hope I never, ever go through that again. Let me analyze what happened and set up some principles and some systems to make sure that not only I don't experience that again, but that people coming behind me don't experience that again. That's where we get the learning. And it's my job as an executive coach, especially for the type of clients that I work with, to create those learning occasions so that they can become who they are destined and supposed to be.
So what I find interesting about all of what you just said is that when we look at Think and Grow Rich and Napoleon Hill, the synthetic part of that is that you took the knowledge of something that existed. I mean, it was firmed, it was baked in, right? And then you applied the creative process on top of that and really made it work for you. And when you think about what you actually do, it's the name Kill sounds like K-I-L-L to me. Okay. So it's killing bad ways that you have discovered through the analysis of the synthetic part and replacing it with new synthetic and more creative. That's what I heard.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. There's a bit of that there. It's just really, there are two parts that I talk about a lot with my clients, especially in the beginning. There is this piece where people have to step into a specific place. Because I believe we all have the answers. We all know what it is that we need to do, right? I think that everyone knows exactly what they're supposed to be doing. But usually, when they're not doing it, one of two things are happening. Number one, we don't always have the language to articulate what it is that we are supposed to be doing. And frequently, if we can't articulate it, if someone asks us, what do you want to do? And we can't answer that question, then we feel like, well, this thing that I believe I'm supposed to be doing must not be real because I can't explain it. And so part of my job is to help people put language around that thing that they know that they're supposed to be doing. And the reason that that's the case is because the part of the brain that controls desire and emotion is not the same part of the brain that controls language. So that happens quite frequently. So that's the first area that I look at. The second area that I look at is a lot of times, if we know what it is that we're supposed to be doing, it requires courage to actually do it, right? And that was the case for me, right? I knew the kind of coaching business that I was supposed to have. I knew exactly what I was created to be, right? This is the reason for all the experiences I've had. This is the reason for all the failures that I've had. The fact that I've lived in 14 states, 19 cities was so that I can be effective at helping people achieve their most audacious goals. But man, that's kind of scary to think that high-powered executives who have millions of dollars worth of responsibility would come to me and ask me to help them get better. So I had to summon the courage to step into that and say, well, no, this is why I'm here. And one of the mantras that I've had for a long time is that with all of my limitations, I'm more than enough to handle this situation. I've just got to have the courage to step into it. So I totally agree with you, and that's something I'm reminded of okay. Every day.
So let's explore what you just said in terms of the courage, because here's what came to mind for me. One of the things that I do is I create legacy walls, and I take all of this historical information, put it on a computer, and then it ultimately ends up on a wall that could be 30 foot long. And I remember the moment when the first one went up and how I realized that that was a fearful thing to be able to take a little tiny thing and watch it really get big. And then when you talked about you had to have the courage to go the next level, what came to mind is that the moment where the real person inside comes forward? You know, is that the moment where you just say, forget the fear, this is in pursuit of a dream, and if I'm going to get there, I've got to just go through it?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that there is this constant battle with most of us. There's this constant battle between who we know we are supposed to be and who society says we are supposed to be, right? And by society, I mean that in the most general terms, right? Society could be our parents. Society could be, you know, the roles that civilizations have determined. It could be stereotypes. But all of that other stuff says that we are supposed to be a certain way. And many of us, especially after we've been educated by, you know, whether it's high school or college, the more educated you are, the more degrees you have, typically the more you're tempted to fall in line with the roles that society or another group says you're supposed to play. So there's that. But then, as I said earlier, I think we always know who we are supposed to be. We always have a sense for I'm supposed to be doing something different. And that's the battle. You talked a little bit about my background. You know, I spent 30 years in corporate America, living out that society dream, that society definition. I got as much education as I could possibly afford from the most reputable schools that would return my application with a positive yes. I went out and I got a job with the most reputable companies I could find. I climbed as high into the organization as I possibly could, living that goal of trying to become a senior vice president of sales for a Fortune 500 company, right? That's what I was in pursuit of. And all the time that I was doing great things by everyone's definition, there was something inside of me saying, yeah, this is good, but this is not what you were created to do. And the hankering that I had You know, even in business discussions, I tended to be really focused on, but what's the learning from this, right? How can I make sure that my salesperson delivers against the result, but they're learning so that the next time they can approach this differently, right? I was constantly thinking in that fashion. And so finally, I had to summon the courage to say, no, this is who I am. This is who I'm supposed to be. And let me step into that with training on how to be effective as a coach. Now that I've done that, I have more clarity around my purpose than I've ever had in 35 years in being a professional. I've got clarity now. But it still requires courage, mm-hmm. because I'm going to be totally honest with you and all of our audience members. I could make a ton more money in the corporate world doing what I was doing before. Trust me, I could make a ton of money. This coaching thing has got me. This desire to want to help people make permanent success into their life and work. That's my calling. That's why, like I said, that's why all of the strengths, all of the opportunities, all of the challenges, that's why all of that's happened into one person called Galen Bingham.
Now, when you say into one person called Galen Bingham, and you just mentioned knowing who you are, I heard you give a presentation most recently, and you laid out 5 steps or something like that that I thought were phenomenal, and it was based on knowing who you are. How does that wrap into the conversation that we were having today? Tell us a little bit about what you shared that day as well.
Yeah. So this links back to what I was saying earlier around, I made the journey from corporate America to entrepreneurial life. I finally decided that, hey, look, this coaching thing, this has got me, right? I keep coming back to this. And I started taking on all clients. If anyone said, hey, look, I've got a problem with a hangnail, Galen, I've got some money. Would you come and coach me through how to manicure? Absolutely, right? I can take care of that for you. And I had some clients. And, was making, a little bit of money doing what I felt I was supposed to do. But at the beginning of this year, I just really had this internal pull that said, no, these are not the clients that you are supposed to be serving. And I really took some time to think about the kinds of clients that are waiting for me to step into their life to help them get to wherever they're trying to go. And I created this criteria, this filter that I use to accept clients into my coaching program, because this program is not for everyone. And so that filter happens to follow the acronyms for POISE. POISE. The P stands for perspective. I tend to work best with clients who have an enterprise level perspective. And let me tell you what I mean by that. Typically, entrepreneurs have an enterprise level perspective. They think about the entire business, not just their function, but the entire business. Some corporate executives, although they may be over a specific geography, they're constantly thinking about how does this fit into the entire enterprise. And that's really important to me, that my clients have a enterprise level perspective. The O stands for outlook. My clients have to have had some success. But as you look back over your past and you project that to the future, you've got kind of an idea as to where your career is going to lead. And my clients, my best clients, they're not happy with the trajectory of their career, right? They're wanting something different, very similar to my situation. it would not be shabby at all for me to be a vice president or senior vice president of a Fortune 500 company, but I wasn't happy with the trajectory of that. So outlook is really important. Integrity for me is really important, and that's the I. And integrity has dual meanings. If I say to Ursula, you know, hey, look, Ursula, I'll meet you at Starbucks at 10:30 on Tuesday, and Tuesday comes 11 o'clock and I'm not there, 11:45 comes and I'm still not there, it's kind of obvious that I'm out of integrity with you. But similarly, if I say to myself that I really want to become really good at playing the guitar, and in order to do that, I've got to practice for an hour three times a week. Week one goes by and I practice for one day. Week two goes by and I practice 2 days, but only for a half hour. Week three goes by and I don't practice at all. Well, I'm equally out of integrity with myself. And as a coach, I can't make you do anything. I can't make clients do anything. And so I've got to have confidence that you're going to do the things that we determine is going to be efficient and productive for you to get to where you say you want to go. Because if you don't, then you're wasting my time and I'm wasting your money. And that's not going to be healthy for anyone. So that's the I. The S stands for something greater. I work best when I am helping someone who has a calling on their life that is going to have a significant impact on the world. If I know that Ursula Odom is trying to preserve legacy, and you're trying to preserve history, and that you're trying to invest into cultures, that kind of thing, that's going to make me want to be a better coach. Because I'm going to be working with Ursula today. And if I do my job well, she's going to be three steps closer to preserving legacy, to preserving history. And so I've got to be on my A game. I've got to read a couple more books. I've got to attend more classes. I've got to somehow get better so that I can help people like Ursula. But if you're saying, hey, look, Galen, I'm just trying to get a promotion, so I can earn another, $10,000 and buy a car, another car, a different car, that's not going to inspire me to want to get better. So something greater is important. And then the last one, E, stands for evaluate. My clients have to be willing to evaluate the stories that we all tell ourselves. Because we all have a script, usually that runs in our head nonstop. Research suggests that there are 67,000 thoughts that go through everyone's head each day, and many of those thoughts aren't even true, right? They're just thoughts, right? There have been tons of things that I believe was true yesterday, and today I realize they're not even true. And so we have to be able to evaluate those thoughts. Are they even true? And then the second piece of that evaluation is we've got to determine, do those thoughts, those reoccurring thoughts, do they serve you, right? There are a couple of thoughts, a couple of stories that I was given at the age of 12 that weren't true. However, they served me, right? When I was 12, I went trick-or-treating with my younger brother, and we were walking down the street and had our little brown paper bags of candy. And I guess the thing for high schoolers at that time was to try to take candy from younger kids. And so these older kids ran up and they tried to take our bags of candy, and they didn't get mine. I guess I was stronger. I held on to it. But they took my brother's bag of candy. He was 8 years old. And we went back home, and my brother was crying. And, my dad said, hey, what's going on? What happened? And I said, well, these big kids came. They tried to take our candy, and they took his candy. And that's probably what he's crying about. And so my dad said at the time, well, Galen, why did they get his bag and not yours? If they took his, that's the same as they're taking yours. And so you need to give him most of the candy in your bag because you are his big brother. And I took that to mean that in any situation that I'm in, I am the big brother. I am responsible, whether they're related to me or not, right? And that story became part of my psychology, right? And that served me in some of the roles, some of the management and leadership roles I've had. It's great to have someone who feels like, hey, this person's success is part of my success, therefore I'm going to do whatever they need to do, whatever they need, I'm going to do to help them get to where they want to be. But there's the point where that doesn't serve you, right? As a coach, it's my job to guide and encourage, but it's not my job to do for you, right? If you don't want to do it, I can't make you do it. And I've got to be willing to step back from that story when it doesn't serve me any longer. And that's one of the things I help my clients evaluate.
Now, I'm going to take kind of a risky step. Earlier, you mentioned that you may have a problem and you put it under your pillow. Not under your pillow. I was thinking that. You sleep on it. And as a child, whenever I had fear, I would take the Bible and put it under my pillow and I'd sleep on it. And later on in life, when I had a problem, I may write it down and put it under my pillow and I would sleep on it. But what I'm thinking of is it may not be such a crazy idea, because when I look at history, one of the things that seems to repeat itself is that people like Mary McLeod Bethune, there were three times that she had three different dreams. And at least one of those times she was ill with a fever and delirious. And so when I hear in the book that, you know, when the energy is going and the body is really working on a different level, what are your thoughts about that creative process and the imagination as it relates to dreams and how you interpret those dreams? And I'm not really trying to get into dream interpretation, but just the thought of it.
Yeah, you know, I think that is absolutely important, and it's hard for me to think of the imagination chapter in isolation, because the beauty of what Napoleon Hill has crafted is that all of these principles kind of work together. And he talks about the subconscious mind and the brain. And the way that that impacts imagination and your question in particular is that the brain, the conscious part of your brain, has one responsibility and literally one responsibility only, and that is to keep you safe. Right, to protect you, to make sure that you're not getting into situations that might harm you, either physically, emotionally, your ego. It's trying to protect you from all that stuff, and that's the part of the brain that we operate with most of the time when we're awake.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we're asleep, when we're not activating our conscious part of the mind, that's when all of the inspiration comes in. Right. That's when you get ideas like, you know, I could fly from here to this other part of the world and create, you know, the solution that, to this problem that I've been struggling with physically. Right. Because there's no conscious part of your brain to say that's crazy. That's not possible. No one's ever done that before. You'd be silly if you were to suggest that. And that's why it takes the courage, like I talked about earlier, to talk about those things and to step into those things, especially if it's something birthed out of creative imagination versus synthetic imagination. It doesn't take a whole lot of courage. It takes some, but not a whole lot to say, I saw this concept here, I did this thing when I worked for this company, and now I'd like to apply it to your problem, right? That's synthetic imagination. But it takes a whole lot of courage to say, you know what, Ursula, I've never seen anyone do this before, but let's try going right and seeing if we can leap over the pond and flap our arms and see if we can actually fly like birds, right? that's kind of crazy. But I am so glad that the Wright brothers and others were kind of crazy, because now flying is a part of our natural way of getting around. Maybe not today, but that's a natural part of how we do things. You know, it's kind of crazy to say, hey, look, you know, I know that I'm in this part of the world, but I'd love to be able to talk to someone who's not even here. I'd love to be able to have a conversation, a real life conversation, with someone who is not physically in my space. And that's kind of crazy. I'm so glad that Alexander Graham Bell and Thomas Edison and all of these other people, they were courageous enough to step into this space that was kind of crazy, because now talking on the telephone, that's part of our everyday life. I've got friends, I've got colleagues, and I've got clients who literally live in other countries. Right, they literally live in Dubai. They live in. I've got a client in Sweden. I've got colleagues in Paris, and I've never been to Dubai. Yeah. But through technology, which was someone's crazy idea, birthed in their imagination, we're able to connect two or three times a week, right? And I'm able to have coaching sessions with people, literally who speak another language.
Yeah.
Right. I had a colleague send me an article for a project that we were working on together. We were going to do a global brainstorming program with people from Europe and the United States. And she found this great article that spoke to the legitimacy of what we were trying to do. And she sent it to me and she said, but Galen, there's one problem. It's in French. Right. And don't know how good you are with French, but this article's in French. Well, I took a half of semester of French when I was in the sixth grade, but that can't help me now. But I was able to find an app that could translate that article from French to English, and I could then read the article in English, then give her back my perspective to move our project forward. Now, that's a crazy idea that someone had, and I'm so glad that they were crazy enough to step into that, because that allowed me to contribute to a global brainstorming project with a colleague from Paris, France.
So it's interesting that you mentioned Thomas Edison and crazy. One of the things that was really interesting about his story is that when he was a child, he literally sat on an egg to see if it would hatch. Now, yes, they thought he was crazy, but it was his imagination going, wow. And, well, he found out that it wouldn't. He didn't have the patience to sit there as long as a hen would sit there, for sure. That, to me, is rather interesting when you think about how you laid that out in terms of people being crazy or not. And when you mention about flying, it reminded me of why I don't like to have things playing in the background when I'm asleep, because I believe that when you are asleep, things do get in, okay? And what you think about before you go to bed gets in. And the example that I know this is true is that I had a conversation with someone that is a metaphysical type person. That's how they describe themselves. And they talked about flying. They said, you know you can fly in your sleep, don't you? I said, no, I don't know that. And they described the process of flying in your sleep. And lo and behold, that night when I went to sleep, I could tell you I flew. Scared the living daylights out of me. I said, oh, Lord, that's too much influence. But it was fascinating. It actually felt good. But it does bring into question or into reality the amazing thing that we have, that's all of this, you know, from physical to spiritual or whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, one of my significant inspiration, and he's actually a member of my invisible board of directors, I talk about him a lot, is Bruce Lee. And come to find out, Bruce Lee was a major disciple of Napoleon Hill's work. And he famously said something, and I'm going to mess up this quote, but he said something like, the only limitations are the limitations that we have in our mind. And in reality, there are no limitations. There are only plateaus, and you must break through those plateaus in order to achieve whatever it is that you're trying to achieve. And I think that that's so true. We put so many constraints on our abilities that it's laughable. If you were to actually think about what you say to yourself and why you can't accomplish, you would be amazed. You know, I read a lot of business books, and there was a book that talked about this person came up with five reasons why he can't accomplish a specific goal. And what they didn't realize is that you don't need five reasons why you can't accomplish a goal. You only need one reason why you can't accomplish something, and you get locked into that and you won't accomplish it. And so that's a big part of what I say, courage. You just have to have the courage to step into those things. And one of the things I've really come to appreciate as I've gotten deeper into coaching and emotional intelligence and those kinds of things is that, and the brain, the study of the brain, is that words matter. Words matter. And you've got to be careful of the words that you use. We all have stories about Ann McNeil, yeah, the founder of the International Mastermind Association. I told one of my stories earlier today. Another story is when I was in the program, I was reading the book, I was playing hard, and I said something like, boy, I'm having success that I'm really not supposed to have. And I said that kind of in joking, right, in jest. And I said that to Ann, and Ann corrected me. She stopped the entire conversation. There must have been 30 people on the WebEx, and she stopped me, and she said, no, Galen, the success that you have is what you are entitled to. That's what you're supposed to have. You've got to manage the language that you tell yourself, because otherwise your brain is going to start acting on this idea that you're not supposed to have this success.
Wow.
These things that are happening aren't supposed to be happening. And one of the things that I've learned is that we as people, we want to be right. We always want to be right. Our brains are wired so that we find evidence to support whatever it is that we believe to be true. And so if I tell my brain, if I tell my subconscious, I'm not supposed to have this kind of success, it's then going to start looking for evidence to support the fact that, yeah, Galen, you're right. You're not supposed to have this kind of success. Well, the opposite is true as well. If you tell yourself, and now we're getting into auto-suggestion, but if you tell yourself, this is the kind of life I'm supposed to have, this is the kind of money I'm supposed to have, these are the kinds of relationships that I'm supposed to have, your brain is going to start looking for evidence to support, yeah, Galen, you're right. This is the kind of money you're supposed to have. These are the kinds of relationships you're supposed to have. This is the kind of work that you're supposed to be doing, because our brain intuitively wants to be right. And your reticular activating system, which is a fancy term, just talks about the fact that your brain is going to find evidence to support what you believe to be true.
Amazing. That was an aha moment right there. But so as it relates to imagination, as we wind down, did you have an aha moment in this chapter?
Did I have an aha? You know, I constantly have ahas in this chapter. And the joke that I say a lot is that I feel like someone is sneaking into my office at night and putting content in this book, because it wasn't there the last six or seven times that I read it. And the key thing that jumps out at me is actually on page 95 of this version of the book. And it says that ideas are the beginning points of torments or fortunes. But ideas are products. Ideas are products. And this thought that my idea is a thought, it's an energy, but it's begging, it's the beginning stages of a product. So how can you take your product, believe in it enough, nurture it enough, so that you can turn it into something physical, so that people are willing to exchange money for that idea? That has just really, that's really jumped out at me. Not only am I a certified coach, where I work with amazing clients that are doing amazing things, but I also own a retail business where I've got a physical product. And I learned so much from that experience that I bring over into my coaching business. And so this idea of ideas being products is something that jumped out at me this time. It's been written in this book, and they haven't changed the text since 1937, but I swear someone just snuck in last night and put that into this version, because I certainly didn't see it the last six or seven times I've read it.
Great. And I have to admit that manifested itself in my life in the last couple of weeks as well. I was on a mastermind call, Zoom call, and a person said to me, Ursula, when you make more money, then you position others to make more money as well. Because, you know, it's like, am I worthy of this amount of money? And that idea, that thought, even though I'd heard it before, I held on to it. And then it just so happened my birthday was coming up the next week. And I said, okay, so with the situation we have going on with the tragic COVID-19, I couldn't have a birthday party, and it was a big day for me. And I said, okay, so I'll have a virtual book signing. And I ultimately ended up pulling in about 8 people, my authors, myself, and we had a virtual book signing, and it was fun. So that idea, one comment, stuck. Took form in an opportunity because of the situation we have going on now. And I now see my office doing similar things. They're now going out doing the same thing. And it was, I had not seen it. I didn't say it didn't happen before, but I had not seen anybody do that before. And I was scared to death because I had never done a live Zoom by myself like that before, but we did it, you know? So this is an important chapter, as has been all the wonderful things that you have said today. I've just enjoyed this, and I'm sure the audience has too. So tell us how to get a hold of you in order to be baked into the success that we're supposed to be.
Yeah, so there's a couple of ways of getting a hold of me. I mean, if you want to reach out and just connect, I'm all over Facebook. So you can go to Galen Bingham on Facebook. I'm on Instagram under Galen Bingham. I'm on Twitter under Galen Bingham. You can find my books on Amazon. I've got a fully baked podcast and YouTube channel, all of that just by searching Galen Bingham. My website is www.galenbingham.com, and there you can find links to all of the different places that I'm in. But the coaching program, that's something that I am really, really passionate about. And I would really encourage people to think long and hard about whether they're really ready to activate those goals that they have for real. Because a lot of times people will say, hey, I've got these things that I want to accomplish someday, which is my least favorite phrase in the entire world, someday. But they're really not interested in taking those items off their someday list. Some people will say, I want to write a book someday. You know, in my family, it's been kind of the joke. We all talked about writing a book someday. My dad is going to write, he's got like 15 books that he's going to write someday. But if we were to talk about, working with me or working with each other as a coach, we're going to put some serious focus against those things. And if you're not serious about wanting to move forward on your someday goals, you know, I can refer to you. I can refer you to some people that might be interested in playing along with you. But if you work with me, we're going to get things done. Literally, I commit that we're going to execute and crush 3 of your top 5 someday goals literally in 6 to 9 months. It's going to be taken care of. So those are the ways of getting a hold of me. I've enjoyed this conversation as I do with all my conversations with you, Ursula. One of the things that you remind me of, and I'd love to leave the audience with this, is one of my favorite quotes, so much and so that I've included it in my book. But it's this quote that says, this is by James Michener, who is a Pulitzer Prize winning novelist and author of Tales of South Pacific. And he says, "The master in the art of living makes little distinction between his work and his play, his labor and his leisure, his mind and his body, his education and his recreation, his love and his religion. He hardly knows which is which. He simply pursues his vision of excellence at whatever he does, leaving others to decide whether he's working or playing. To him, he's always doing both." And I'm always reminded of that whenever you and I get time to connect. So I would wish that for our audience as well.
Well, to the audience, that is absolutely an example of the man knows what he's talking about, because he certainly got it right. I hardly know when I'm playing or when I'm working, because they do come together. Thank you for that. And to get in touch with me, Sulatoo, that's SULATOO.com. When you want to have your book published by someone who cares and who loves playing and working at the same time. So, speaking of the same time, next week, 8 o'clock, Saturday, we're back here to Think and Grow Rich. And thank you, Galen, for such a wonderful show. You all take care.